This hour of the Jason Rancho brought to you by Robbins & Company Structural Moving and Foundation Repair. We've got a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
Secretary of State Kim Wyman secured funding with Governor Jay Inslee to pay for prepaid postage, basically for stamps, on your mail-in ballots for this year's primary and general election, which they hope will increase voter turnout. Can we just be honest for a moment? It's not going to do that. Although I still support the idea. I love the idea of not having to find a stamp just so I can vote. But there's a caveat in the funding. And it's pissing off a lot of Seattle Democrats. And I love it. It's awesome. They're not paying for the ballots in King County. Instead, they're going to ask the state legislature to reimburse them at some point next year. And that's not a guarantee. I assume it'll happen, but it's not a guarantee. And we were told yesterday, and Jacob can jump on and confirm this, I was told King County Council Chair Joe McDermott, Democrat, is not happy. Two explanation points.
Yes.
Not happy.
I like press releases that are a little unprofessional.
I don't even think it was a press release. I think it was just some dude emailing us from his office saying he's not happy. We tried to get him on. Is he coming on at any point to tell us why he's not happy?
Hopefully we can have him on tomorrow morning.
Okay. Well, it's a little late. I mean, the news was from yesterday after the show, and then we're talking about it today, and then I'm gonna talk to him tomorrow. Okay. He called it grossly unfair. But the thing is, they're literally the reason why they're not getting the funds up front. Everyone at the time said, King County, do not pass your bill, your standalone bill that would pay for prepaid postage. We're working on it at a state level. If you do this, you're creating an imbalance. And so they did it anyway. And it kind of forced the hand of Kim Wyman.
The county passing it on their own is what put all of this in motion. If the council had not done it at all, obviously we wouldn't be having this discussion. They waited so late in the election planning cycle and did it in such a quick manner that we had a very short window of time to respond. My concern was that a voter who couldn't afford a stamp in Yakima County, for example, could be being treated differently than a voter in King County just by geography.
Okay, that last part, everyone can afford a stamp or to drop off the ballot for free at many drop boxes all across the state. Push that aside, she is correct in saying, look, I support this idea, and we played audio of her before the vote actually took place in King County. I support the idea. But if you do it alone, you're creating an imbalance. If you do it alone, you're treating our voters differently by county. And we have plans at the state level to do this for everybody. Hold off. But no, they wanted to be the first ones to do it. And as a result of trying to be the first ones to do it, they find themselves in this position where they're not getting the funding. Oh, I'm so sorry, you're not getting the funding. They could have easily waited, but they chose not to. You reap what you sow. I love this. Because he's mad with how many explanation points?
Two at least.
Two. At least two. And that means, like, that translates in real world to, I'm angry. And then you slap your hand down on your desk multiple times. And you get a little red, but only around the ears and the forehead. And then everyone's like, okay, whoa, Joe, chill out, man. We'll get the money. Does anyone think they're not going to get, actually reimbursed next year? Does anyone actually believe that they'll get reimbursed? And by the way, if you're so upset that you're not getting reimbursed for something that was only $383,000 is what they're putting into this? Are you that hard up on cash in King County? What's going on there? Oh, well, we could have really used the money. Well, then why'd you pass it in the first place? Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So all-star second baseman Robinson Cano, and it took me to this story to realize he played second base. I don't know why I assumed he was an outfielder.
I think he's always been on the infield.
Was he ever a pitcher?
No.
Catcher?
No, okay, now you're screwing with me.
Well, no, I did not know he was a second baseman.
I mean, those aren't real positions. You just like kind of meander through. Like you're playing.
Well, you start pitcher, catcher, then first, second, third, or excuse me, shortstop, third. You go in an order.
What are you talking about?
The most important player is the pitcher because he throws the ball.
Okay.
Okay. The other important player is the catcher because if he doesn't catch the ball, and what do you mean? What are you looking at me?
I don't know. This seems like I don't.
Pitcher.
Yes.
Catcher. First, second,
they're important,
shortstop.
But that why would Robinson Cano do all these positions?
Everyone talks about Robinson Cano.
Yeah, he's good at hitting.
okay, fine. He can't play baseball, but we put him at second base because he's only good at hitting. If he's not good at anything, you put him at third base because no one hits it to the third baseman. And I know that because I used to be a third baseman after I screwed up my arm pitching. Anyway, he's a cheater. He's been suspended for 80 games for violating the MLB drug policy. He used performance-enhancing drugs, apparently tried to cover up by using a diuretic, which tried to get that drug out of his system before he was getting looked into. It's a whole situation that started actually in the preseason. He was appealing it, but then he dropped the appeal. And as a result, according to Bob Stelton from our sister station, 710 ESPN Seattle, this comes with significant costs, not just to Robinson Cano's career, but also his team.
Right. He does not get paid for the 80 games he'll miss. It amounts to $11 million. Also, if the Mariners were so fortunate as to find themselves in the postseason, he would not be allowed to play.
Manager Scott Service says this is obviously disappointing for the club.
Yeah, obviously, it's disappointing. Everybody knows what Robinson Cano means to our ball club and what a big part he is in our lineup and certainly our clubhouse every day. But you know, the focus going forward is we got off to a good start this season. We've certainly got plenty of talent in that clubhouse and on the ball club to keep it rolling here. That's the goal. You know, guys, just do what they're capable of doing. Don't want guys to try to press and, oh, we got to pick up for Robbie. No, we got plenty of talent in there. We'll be fine. Just got to keep moving in the right direction. And, you know, along the way, we might see some guys switch some positions and do some things to help the ball club out. But if it's about winning, and the goal here, we're not going to deviate from the plan. The plan's to get in the playoffs, and that'll continue to be the goal.
Yeah, that'll happen. There's some people poo-pooing this story for a number of reasons. Chief among them, for some at least, are that he hurt his hand at the last game, and it's a hand fracture, and he was going to be out for some time anyway. And so he had the timing, I suppose, is good because he would have otherwise been out, and maybe that's part of why he decided to drop the appeal, thinking he eventually was going to be found in violation. You might as well do it now when you're actually injured and weren't going to play anyway. But then over at 710sports.com, our 710 colleague Danny O'Neill, he had a piece up that basically said that this wasn't a moral failing on the part of Robinson Cano. And he had two main points in his argument. Number one, he said it's not that bad of a transgression in the scheme of things, of the potential transgressions that could have happened. And then he said, number two, well, Cano basically did it to be competitive in a world where your body and your performance, that's how you make a living, right? That's how you earn a living for you and your family. Now, I reject categorically both of his arguments. This is absolutely a moral failing. And yes, I understand that individual morals, I suppose, will differ from person to person. But a societal moral should be cheating is bad. Cheating is wrong. Because you're not just acting selfishly. If it was purely selfishness here, and it only impacted himself, then you can say, okay, it's not that big of a deal in the grand scheme of things. Yeah, I guess he could have done something worse. But murder is worse than stealing. Yes, we all agree. But they're both still immoral, particularly when you do something selfishly, and that's what he did here. He did this selfishly. How important is he to the Mariners? He's incredibly important, right? I imagine that there's lots of pressure on him, but you know what? He chose to cheat. He chose to take a drug that enhanced his performance in a position that not only puts him in a place now where he's punishing the entire team by leaving, but you kind of screwed over a whole bunch of other players who maybe didn't want to cheat, who try to play by the actual rules. Those are the people who are moral. The ones who, despite them probably being at a disadvantage for not cheating, because I imagine this kind of stuff happens in all leagues all the time, you just hurt someone who tried to play by the book, right? You took a position that maybe could have gone to someone else who was actually trying to play by the rules. And that makes this incredibly immoral. Of course this is a moral failing. He doesn't care about his actions. He screwed over his team, he screwed over himself, and he screwed over probably dozens and dozens and dozens of other players who maybe would have gotten a shot if they were playing on even playing field. I'd love to hear from you, though. Send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. The KTTH hotline brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. Now it's time to get you work the right way with the right way traffic.
They're making progress on this accident in Smoky Point. They've got just the right lane of southbound 5 now blocked, but you're still backed up between 530 and 531, and it's pretty jammed on southbound 5. They're asking you to use alternate routes to get around this. The rest of the commute is looking fairly typical. Volume's building in all the familiar places. northbound 5 and north 167 already filled in between 18 and 516, and I'm seeing congestion in the S-curves. Both floating bridges wide open. Express toll lanes, $2 is the top price right now. Don't get stranded. Sign up for the superhero service of AAA. It includes 200 miles of towing. Call 800-JOIN-AAA or visit AAA.com. That's AM 770 KTTH traffic. I'm Tammy Bennett.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, a Democrat is calling out the Seattle City Council saying, you're giving us all a bad name statewide. We're going to talk with State Senator Mark Mullett when we return. You've been listening to What's Trending, powered by SunsetAutoFamily.com. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. Seattle has passed their head tax, and my next guest says it's going to impact his business, which is outside of Seattle. State Senator Mark Mullett, he's a Democrat from Issaquah. He's also a businessman, and he says his business, Zeke's Pizza in Issaquah, will be negatively impacted by the head tax. He joins me now. Good morning. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, good morning, Jason.
So I've been saying this for a while, that whatever happens in Seattle doesn't just stay in Seattle. It impacts a whole bunch of businesses outside of the region. So for you, how does it impact your business in Issaquah?
Well, I think what I've seen, you know, I've Ben & Jerry's ice cream stores and pizza restaurants in Issaquah, all on the east side. None of them are in the city limits that I own. And but all my customers, this is where they work at. Like, they all work for the large regional employers in the Puget Sound, whether that's Starbucks or, you know, Amazon, it doesn't matter. And so my growth in my business over the last 6 years, a lot of that's been because these companies have been hiring people. And as people move here and they have good paying jobs, they buy pizza and ice cream. Mm-hmm. And once those jobs go away, my customers go away. That's the real challenge, I think, of what Seattle's doing. Makes it difficult for small business owners. The idea that it's only impacting 3% of businesses is sheer insanity, because for one, those 3% of businesses employ half the people in Seattle, and two, that trickles down to every business outside the city where all those people actually live, not just where they work. So
are your colleagues, other folks who own their own small businesses, are they also scared of the reality now as a result of this head tax?
Yeah, I think everybody's nervous that, you know, nervous about what it's going to do in terms of economic growth in our region, as we're sending a message to the rest of the country that we're going to penalize you for creating jobs here.
So your colleague, Mark Schessler, he wants to clarify language in a current existing law to make sure that this Seattle head tax can't actually go through. If it's passed, it would work retroactively, so it would essentially kill this head tax. Do you support that legislation?
Yes, I've been saying that if they decided to move forward, which obviously they did yesterday, that this has statewide implications. That I chair the Financial Institutions Committee in the Senate, and we're constantly meeting with other companies from other states and other countries trying to get them to invest here to create jobs, and the largest city in your state is undermining that message. I think it prompts the reason why we have a state legislature and why we might need a policy bill. My suggestion is, I'm willing to enhance the amount of money the state invests in affordable housing, specifically in King County, so we can solve the problem that they're trying to solve. But my trade-off would be, if we're going to increase those investments to create more affordable housing in King County, then we would also combine that with a law that prevents you from penalizing someone for creating a job, such as the head tax law they just voted on.
So do you anticipate a lot of Democrats breaking with Seattle on this? Because, you know, we generally don't hear this kind of language coming from Democrats. There's this general sense that, you know, yes, there's some differences in ideological positions, but they're still progressive.
I think it's going to be a lift. Our session starts. First off, we're not in session until January 14th. So mm-hmm. Our next session is January 14th, April 28th. So we're a ways down the road. It's 7 months until we're back in Olympia to create laws again. And you are correct. I think it's going to, you know, we have our work cut out for us to try to get other Democrats on board to go against the Seattle City Council. At some point, I believe they're bad for the Democratic brand. I think the brand of Democrats is we want to create jobs in the state. And if you have a elected municipal body sending the opposite message, you have to break ranks with them.
Yeah. Are they out of control?
I'm very frustrated. And I, because I don't live in Seattle and I can't vote for them, it's hard for the policies they're voting on are having huge impacts on my ability to be a successful small business owner in Issaquah, and it's frustrating.
When you look at your own colleagues in the Democratic Party statewide, how different are they than the progressives and the socialists in the Seattle City Council?
It's very different. I always joke that it only takes me 20 minutes to drive down to meetings in Seattle, but I feel like a Republican from Alabama when I get there, because even though we're all Democrats, I'm like, man, how can we all be Democrats? Like, they are so far left of me, and I don't can. I mean, I'm pretty liberal on all the social issues. I think my challenge as a business owner is I realize that the businesses aren't just rolling in all this money, and this idea that they're not going to choose to locate elsewhere if you're going to penalize them is insanity, because they will locate somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's my fear, is what's going to happen.
Well, this tax impacts lots of folks outside of Seattle. It impacts people regardless of whether or not they have an R or a D next to their name. And I do hope that once the session is back in session, once the legislative session starts up in January, you're able to get some Democrats to come to your side on this particular issue, join Republicans in a nice bit of bipartisanship, and end what is just a disaster of attacks against Amazon and a lot of other big businesses, but also it impacts a lot of small businesses outside of Seattle. So I wish you the best of luck. Again, I've been talking with State Senator Mark Mullett. He's a Democrat from Issaquah. We appreciate you coming on this morning and giving us your take.
Thanks a lot, Jason.
Absolutely.
Have a really good morning. Take care.
You're listening to The Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM in the Greater East Side. A student is suing Washington State University, calling them out for negligence in their failure to protect her from a hostile campus environment that led to some significant racist taunts. Dominique Stewart was 18 years old when this allegedly happened back in 2015. She's represented by a local lawyer, friend of mine, Ann Bremner. And Dominique joins me this morning. Dominique, thank you so much for coming on.
Having me.
So let's talk about what ended up happening. It seems to have all started in February of 2015. You were a freshman at the time. You went to a fraternity party where you say you were targeted because you're Black. So tell us what happened.
Yes. So at the time of the incident, my friends and I had been invited to Phi Delta Theta. One of my friends was having a birthday party. And, you know, the night seemed to go very well. Until we were leaving the fraternity. And as we were leaving the fraternity, one of the members had decided to yell derogatory names at me and proceeded to slam the door in my face. You know, that night was just, you know, one of the worst nights of my life. There was fraternity members on the balcony who were recording and laughing at us, and you know, it was just overall such a negative experience.
What were you called?
So I was called the N-word and the B-word.
And did they, was there any indication as to why they were targeting you? Did it seem like it was random?
Yeah, so I had no idea who that person was at all. I was actually just waiting on the porch for my friend. They had gone back into the house to use the bathroom really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the members had come from a side exit and just yelled, like, you know, get the F out of my face, you N-word, B-word, and then slammed the door in my face. And, you know, another member opened the door and said, oh, sorry, he didn't mean that. He was intoxicated, and then slammed the door in my face again.
Huh. Okay.
So I was just...
So the drunk defense.
Waiting on the... Yeah. Yeah. I was just waiting on the porch for my friends, really.
So...
Not harming anyone else.
You end up reporting it to officials at Wazoo, and it sounds like at least initially they handled this correctly in that they ended up expelling that kid, so not just from the fraternity but from the school in general. Were you happy with that decision?
You know, I felt like at that point I don't know if expelling was the right choice. I just wanted the person to learn that it's not okay for him to use those words to anyone.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe some diversity training. I'm not really sure if, you know, Phi Delta even really learned from that situation. And I felt that it wasn't just him who was involved with the situation. It was the other members who were laughing on the porch and, you know, who were kind of sticking up for him in the sense of saying, oh, he doesn't mean that, he was just intoxicated. It wasn't just a single isolated situation.
So where is this lawsuit coming from? If they end up expelling you, obviously you'd like to see some training, but they're not, I don't think, required to go through that training, and they did punish the one student. So you're claiming negligence. Why are you unhappy?
I would say that I'm unhappy because I felt like there was multiple situations going on. When I went back to the university, I had chicken thrown at my head. I had people on social media saying threats and harassment, and I overall was isolated in my room. I just felt like the university didn't provide the adequate safety procedures that I needed at that time.
What were you asking for at the time? So obviously you were talking with the school. I know you met with one of the members, the Wazoo Interim Vice President for Student Affairs.
Yeah.
So what did you ask for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so on March 1st, my mom and I had met with Melinda Husky to address my family's concerns, which included the hostile campus climate and safety. And we tried to work the situation out with the university themselves, but they just weren't really willing to work with us. So that's when we had to get Ann involved.
Ann Bremner, your attorney. But what specifically were you asking?
Ann Bremner.
What were you asking Melinda Husky for, the school in general for?
I was asking for assistance to my classroom. I was also asking for a different change of scenery for my dorms. And, you know, a lot of times, well, I was just too afraid to even leave my dorm at the time. So she would still ask me to come and speak with her in her meetings, or speak with her in her office, even though I was too afraid to even leave my dorm. They also didn't really provide me with assistance with my classes. I had to drop a lot of my coursework, and, you know, at that time, I was a 3.0 student, so it was really upsetting for me to fall behind in my studies as well.
If you're just joining me, I'm talking with Dominique Stewart. She was 18 years old at the time where she was the alleged victim of racist taunts and harassment both on campus and online simply based upon the color of her skin, and in a lawsuit against Wazoo represented by Ann Bremner. Dominique makes the point that they were negligent in protecting her from this hostile campus environment. You allege, Dominique, that you are now living with PTSD and anxiety as a result of what happened on campus. When did you seek treatment where you were, you know, given that label of PTSD?
I was seeking treatment right from the beginning.
Okay.
When they labeled me with the PTSD.
And you told the school that you were seeking this kind of treatment? Because the one thing I will say is, you know, if you're an administrator and a student says, come meet at my dorm room rather than the office, they probably would look at that and say, that's a little unorthodox. That's not how it's supposed to happen. They might not have known that they needed to accommodate you in a slightly different way.
Yeah, I had told them that I didn't feel safe to leave my dorm at the time. So, and my mother told them as well.
In retrospect, when you look back at what happened, do you think that that was a reasonable fear that you had?
Yeah, I do think that it was a reasonable fear. The environment was just very hostile, and I felt like I didn't have the support of, you know, my family was 4 or 5 hours away. So it was really just me by myself on that campus. And it was just, you know, overwhelming for an 18-year-old who was just going there to seek, you know, to seek education, have all that extra stuff happening, wasn't expecting that.
Did you ever call the police?
And wake up. Yeah. Yes. So the police was called after that incident when I had the chicken thrown at my head.
What did they do?
So, you know, that phone call was just something I wasn't expecting at all. They had told me to walk back to Greek Row and try to find the license plate of the person who had thrown the chicken at my head. And I told them, like, I don't feel comfortable walking back there at this time. I was just completely, you know, afraid for my safety.
Mm-hmm. And so did it sort of just end at that point? Did they ever find out who did it?
No, they never found out who did it. And I also reported it to the university, and they didn't seek, they didn't do more investigation at that time.
Do you still go to Wazoo?
I actually graduated from WSU May 5th, 2018.
Okay, so just about a week ago. Why did you stay at Wazoo despite not feeling comfortable going to class on your own and just the general environment of how you were being treated?
I had severe physical and emotional distress, but I just worked so hard to get to university, and my family, especially my mom, worked hard to provide me with an opportunity to have education.
Yeah. And at what point, and this will be my last question, one of my last questions, at what point did you feel comfortable, you know, leaving the dorm room and going back to a somewhat normal life on campus?
I'm going to say that I never really felt comfortable to walk on campus.
But you still left the dorm room, obviously. You were given an escort to all of your classes. They didn't give in on that. So about how long did it take for you to resume relatively normal habits, even if you did feel uncomfortable?
I never had really felt comfortable again. You know, there was never that safety to just leave my house and get to class. I always felt like I needed to carry mace or watch my back or try to walk with a roommate. But I never had that safety again.
Again, I've been talking with Dominique Stewart at 18 years old back in 2015. She says she was the victim of racism on campus, racism that created a hostile campus environment that she believes Wazoo didn't do enough to protect her from. The lawsuit is pending now. Again, local attorney Ann Bremner, who's a friend of the show and a friend of mine, she represents Dominique in this lawsuit. Once we have more information, once we get more word from Wazoo, because we do want to be fair and present Wazoo's side of things, we'll certainly do that. Dominique, I appreciate you spending time talking about this lawsuit. I know you're not talking about it with many members of the media, so thank you for giving us your side of things.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. You're listening to the Jason Rance Show on AM 770 KTTH. Live from the Online Trading Academy studio, it's the Jason Rance Show. President Trump's name is being lobbied for a potential Nobel Peace Prize. A little early, a little premature over this summit that may or may not happen with North Korea. President Trump was asked about it not long ago.
You deserve the Nobel Prize, do you think?
Everyone thinks so, but I would never say it.
You know what I want to do? I want to get it finished. The prize I want is victory for the world. Not for even here. I want victory for the world, because that's what we're talking about. So that's the only prize I want.
Weirdly mature answer for someone who likes to take credit for a lot of this stuff, so kudos to him. Maybe he realizes that this summit that's supposed to happen in about a month in Singapore is kind of still loose. They've all agreed that the North Koreans are pulling out a little bit, maybe kind of, sort of, but really it's just an ego trip, because the summit is now in trouble. North Korea is getting mad that the U.S. and South Korea agreed to military drills. And they're saying, look, if you want us to completely dismantle our nuclear arsenal before the meeting, well, it's a no-go. Robert Kelly, a Korean expert, he's a professor at Pusan National University in South Korea, told the BBC that North Korea is basically, they're just upset with the narrative behind the stories, and it seems to be driven by ego.
The North Koreans are upset at the way that this is being framed globally as some kind of surrender by the North Koreans, right? That they're coming to Singapore on their knees or as a supplicant, asking for favors, asking for handouts, sanctions relief, rather than coming as a peer. And that's what the North Koreans really want, right? It's the photograph of Kim Jong-un meeting Donald Trump as an equal.
And yet where we are right now is more than where we were with President Obama in this position. Obama wasn't able to negotiate this, and he got a Nobel Peace Prize. He literally got a Nobel Peace Prize because of a climate that he created. They said it was a new climate in international relationships fostered by Obama, especially in reaching out to the Muslim world. So he went to Muslims and apologized for American behavior. He ends up getting a Nobel Peace Prize. You've got Trump actually doing something and moving along relationships in a way that pushes us further and further toward, or further away from any kind of violence. And you've got a whole bunch of progressives who say, oh, no, he should never get this simply because you said Donald Trump and we don't like him. You triggered us by asking us about President Trump. Campus Reform went on the campus at UC Santa Cruz, and they were asking students if they thought Trump deserved the Nobel Peace Prize.
Do you think he deserves the award?
Hell no, that's a joke. Okay. What has he done for peace? Okay. Yeah, nothing.
No. I feel like he just thinks that he deserves many awards, and that's just stupid.
I don't really think so.
I don't know, it's just too good of a prize for him to have credit for.
But then they asked the students if Obama deserved the Nobel Peace Prize that he ended up winning.
You feel like President Obama deserved the award when he got it in 2009?
Yes.
And what did he do to deserve it?
Was it for his education, push on education, or was it for the Obamacare?
You can't be that dumb, right? Right, okay, yeah, I guess you can.
Obama? I don't know. I mean, I'm not even sure what he did to get the award.
Yeah, I think if Obama won it, why wouldn't he win it, right? Because I don't know why Obama won it. Even, you know, I like Obama, but I don't think there's any real legitimate reason why he should have won it.
And that's like that's a legitimate criticism, right? Or reaction. You can like President Obama and still say, wait, at 2009, we gave him a Nobel Peace Prize. He didn't do anything at that. He wasn't even into the half of his first tenure as president.
I thought that was the general, and that was the general response that people had in the moment in 2009. They were like, "Oh, this is."
To be fair to Obama, because he was in a weird position, you don't normally say, "I did nothing. Screw you. I'm not showing up." You do show up, and I thought he handled it well. But I mean, it goes to show you that when people who deserve it, based upon just the actions in the moment, are judged by all the things they do outside of that moment. And yet you've got Obama, who's judged not on any individual accomplishment, but just because we like him. It just shows you that the Nobel Peace Prize, if they don't at least have Trump's name in the conversation, is all political. That's all this is. Now, I don't know if he should win a Nobel Peace Prize. His name should certainly be in the conversation. His name should 100% be out there as part of the conversation as they come up with people who are deserving of this award. It's certainly possible that there are lots of other people who are way higher on the list than President Trump. And I do think that it's premature to assume that what's going on in North Korea is going to be ultimately a success. But to pretend that just on the surface, no, he shouldn't be considered. Well, that just goes to show you that you don't care about what the Nobel Peace Prize is supposed to stand for. You just care about the people. You want symbolic gestures given to people you happen to like based on the politics you happen to agree with, not necessarily on bringing us closer and closer to a world where we're peaceful. And if he's able to get North Korea to completely denuclearize their country and get rid of that apparatus and infrastructure, he should be getting a hell of a lot more than a Nobel Peace Prize.
Materials home safely when promised. Not everyone in Seattle has a van or truck. That's why we offer a flat $40 delivery for all local Dunn orders. Our delivery is just another way to make your home improvement project a success. If you have any questions about delivery, please contact me personally, Mike Dunn at DunnLumber.com.
Dunn Lumber, building success together.
Would you like to get the lowest prices on most of your airline tickets? SmartFares can save you up to 70%. Call now for special unpublished rates, 888-789-5040.
That does it for hour number one of the Jason Rants Show. Don't forget to go behind the scenes of the show at facebook.com/Jason Rants Show. You can also follow me on Instagram and Twitter. Just look up Jason Rants, JasonRantz. When we come back, the Seattle City Council can't even properly protest banks. We'll tell you the embarrassing flop when we return right here on the Jason Rants Show.
Seattle's right choice for conservative talk radio. AM 770 KTTH Seattle. Now, the latest